And the weather today, highs of 13 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade. After an overcast morning with occasional heavy rain, it'll become mild with light showers.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
And the little snow bear. Just two more sleeps till Christmas. The snow is falling gently and Lily is super excited. Lily loves snow, so she pops on her coat and sets off to explore. Following a trail of soft, furry footprints, Lily finds a lovely surprise at the very bottom of the garden. A lost little snow bear who's really missing his mummy. As the snow whirls around them, Lily decides to rescue the baby bear before it's too late. So the adventure begins. This funny, heartwarming tale of friendship is the perfect Christmas treat. And you can see it for a mere £8 for a family of four, or indeed a family of four, £28, £8 per ticket. Inquiries to the Terry O'Toole Theatre, 01522 88 3311. That's 01522 88 3311. Ben, you have news of the Zing Theatre and singing at Christmas.
I do indeed. There's an event taking place at the LPAC Zing Caf, or Cafe.
That would be the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre.
Indeed. Which is on campus, but it's called Singing Zing. It's a carol concert with the university. I suppose they're called Carol Society as such.
Conducted, I believe, by our very own Ed Wellman.
Indeed, and amongst other tutors.
Amazing.
You can come along and have yourself a merry little Christmas with the university musicians. Have a drink and a snack and sing along to your favourite Christmas tunes.
And if you want to actually get even more into the Christmas spirit, don't forget we'll be having choristers performing at the Midweek Drive Cake-Off. Or Bake Off, either of those two things, on Wednesday the 14th of December, when we'll also be having new music and a whole heap of other goodies featured.
And this takes place the 8th of December, Thursday the 8th of December, 5:30 to 7.
So precursor. That'll be tonight, of course.
Indeed.
Just wanted to make that kind of clear, because people might be saying, oh, I'll put that off then. Yeah,
if anyone's doing anything tonight.
Check it out.
Indeed.
Sing Ain Zing. Zing and Sing. Put the zing into zing. It's at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, or LPAC, as has often been referred to. Exactly. You know where it is. It's on the Lincoln University campus. Check it out. You know it makes sense.
In the early morning rain, with a dollar in my hand, and the sun always shines, she'll be flying over my home in about 3 hours' time. This old airport's got me down, it's no earthly good to me, and I'm stuck here on the ground, cold and drunk as I can be. You can't jump a jet plane like you can a freight train, so I best be on my way in the early morning rain. You can't jump a jet plane like you can a freight train, so I best be on my way in the early morning rain.
Sage words, Gordon Lightfoot. You can't jump a jet plane like you can a freight train. Not that you'd necessarily want to jump a freight train in the first place, but I think he's referring to being on the road and hopping onto a freight train as opposed to just hopping onto an airplane. Early morning rain on Siren FM. Coming up very shortly, hopefully, I say that because we had a bit of a challenge before the news with our telephone line. We will be speaking to actor Dan Tewitt. That's assuming he's returned from his school run, no doubt.
Indeed.
These are critical moments.
We shall see.
Could open up all sorts of exciting things. Time for electricity.
Thank you.
which is probably exactly what you'd use if you were the fiendish Cuthbert Peabody in the Face of Revenge episode of MI High, where suddenly your face goes everywhere, radio stations across the globe. Isn't that right, actor extraordinaire who once portrayed Cuthbert Peabody, the legendary Daniel Tewitt? How are you, sir?
Hello there. I believe that would be correct.
Yeah, exactly. Scary stuff. And particularly when I saw the radio station, I thought, what has Ben Lewis actually suggested as an ace co-presenter on the show today? There we are.
Well, morning, Dan.
Morning. Hello.
Ah, well, school run has been sorted out. And as we said, not only have we got Game of Thrones, Cinderella, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, but a whole range of things. I was having a look at the Game of Thrones material, obviously courtesy of the delightful IMDb. It's a great thing.
You know, indeed.
It works. It does. It's all true from that sort of point of view. And I was fascinated by Lothar Frey. Extraordinary. I mean, it looks as though filming conditions in Ireland must be pretty grim from that point of view. Or is it a case of, no, it's all done in a computer?
Well, it's a combination of the two, to be honest. That field that we were standing in, I think we shot that particular scene where it's just shouting up at the castle. That was in November. So it's just outside Belfast.
All right.
So it was a bit chilly, but they were knocking around with vast hoses and just dousing that field to make it swampy.
Even worse than you'd actually expect in bog-based Ireland, really.
Yeah, I mean, so it's quite extraordinary the length they had to go to. We had quite a lot of trouble matching over a couple of days because the first day there was a very thick fog which took a very long time to burn off. So we shot in the fog, and then the second day there was no fog.
I just hope George R.R. Martin appreciates the lengths to which you guys sacrifice all sorts of things to produce his magnificent work.
I'm sure he's perfectly well aware of it all.
Although secretly, I must admit, I know I will put this to you, Daniel. Are you not secretly sort of ever tempted within Game of Thrones to actually go into the knights who say, "Nee, nee," or indeed other Monty Python, the Holy Grail scenarios there, such as indeed the coconut hooves for horses? It would solve budgets.
Absolutely. It's all there, yeah, and the wooden rabbit. I think we talked about the wooden rabbit. it was quite a lot. I think we spent quite a lot of those 2 days doing Alan Partridge as well, to be honest. People have got big fans of Partridge.
Well, knowing Daniel Tewitt, knowing me, it's amazing. Yeah, there's a series there. We could develop that in all sorts of ways. Daniel, I gather that you've played cricket with our ace chap here, Ben Lewis.
I have. Hi, Ben.
You're right, mate. How are you?
Very well, thanks. You?
Yeah, all good, thanks. All good.
Yeah, we played... I'm not sure how many games we played. I can certainly remember one game where we played, I don't know, it must be 5 or 6 years ago, we played a Sunday game against Lewis Priory.
Yeah, we've played a couple, and then, we just give you a couple of lifts now and again.
I didn't realise.
I never realised, though, your acting career. I never realised it at all back then.
And driving to a cricketing match with a legend.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. You know, what can you say?
I probably wasn't very busy, which is why I was getting to play so much cricket.
Daniel, you must have been tempted with respect to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 when a skinny ministry wizard, you could have said, do you not know who I am? It's a definite thought.
Well, you know, actually, down at the cricket club, it is my nickname on the field.
Yeah.
They toss me the ball and they say, come on, the wizard.
Nice.
Which is nice, but it's kind of humiliating when, you know, you can't find your line and length. And,
you could simply say you're a wizard from the unseen university. You actually are a Terry Pratchett wizard as opposed to kind of like a wizard from the wizard comic strip.
That's also true. I'm the librarian.
Yes. These are things that are important.
Ben Lewis.
Probably the best reason
to visit Brighton there's ever been.
Sorry, we just had to squeeze in Ben Lewis. It's his contractual obligation, effectively. I know it's difficult, but if we don't actually give Ben Lewis at least one ident per show, suddenly there's a strop. He goes off to the...
I didn't make this contract up, don't worry.
Exactly. And then we have to peel his grapes for him. I don't know, sometimes the riders he puts on his contract. I mean, I don't know, it's just too much.
Notorious.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Daniel, sorry, I didn't cut across you there shamelessly.
No, not at all. I was just going to say I did actually do an adaptation of a Terry Pratchett with the London Bubble Theatre Company back in 1999, maybe.
Right. Last century,
we
though.
We did Lords and Ladies, which is the one where all the elves come through the... stone circles, and I got to give my Sean Hogg, which was highly entertaining.
Nice. Well, currently we're looking at The Hogfather again, and seeing that as one of our books of the month, etc. I mean, Pratchett did manage to capture vernacular in all sorts of ways, really, with Ankh-Morpork and indeed Goblins and Elves, to the extent that I believe the University of Lincoln actually used the Unseen University as a model to actually work through student surveys and so on. Different line from that point of view. Ben, any questions you'd like to put to Daniel Tewitt, which now that you're separately separated by around about 200 miles of stuff, you can now sort of put to him without necessarily hitting him.
So, Dan, are we going to expect you in anything anytime soon? Anything to keep an eye out for?
There's some stuff I've done. I've done a few films this year.
All we'll throw out at present to those that are in the public domain: The Death of Stalin, Sliminoff, watch out for Sliminoff. Ready Player One, check out La Jeremy Johnson.
Was fun. A couple of days with the mighty Steven Spielberg. Yeah, that was good.
He's some sort of director, I believe.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
He seems to be that, yes.
Yeah, he works through all sorts of things. He's been getting... I think it was all thanks to George Lucas, really, and Indiana Jones. Maybe Jaws. Yeah. We're going to need a bigger boat. That's the key thing.
Well, there you go, yeah.
Daniel, why did you decide to enter the fabulously secure profession of acting for a career?
It's because it's, the promise of glory and gold. How can you fail?
Exactly.
It's because I was just thinking about that as I took the children to school. I think I don't have one of those epiphany moments that lots of actors that you ask, I went to see this thing at the theatre when I was 7 and I just knew that was my calling. And I didn't have any of that, but I was involved in lots of school productions. And whenever we went to see... when I was very small, I grew up in Somerset, and we used to go and see entertainers at the Octagon in Yeovil. I remember we went to see Rod Hull and Emu on stage, and Derek Griffith, the great variety performer. And I remember whenever they say, I need a helper, who wants to come on stage, I always put my hand up, and I often did end up on the stage, and I did really enjoy that. But it wasn't like I ever knew that this was what I had to do. Yeah. It was only really when I was coming towards the end of school, I changed my mind about 17 times about where I wanted to apply to university and what I was going to do. I mean, I was thinking about astrophysics at some point, which is, risible looking back on it, and the law and all these other things. But they were all based around, I could go see if I can get into Cambridge, and then I can, see if I can join the Footlights. Yeah. Or I could go to this place because they've got a really excellent drama society. And it was all those, that was the theme that ran through it all, while I was desperately trying to find a subject that I could, have a good tilt at. Yeah. And it was after about my 17th change of heart that my dad just went, this is a bit crazy. Just stop and have a little think about what it is that you're doing and what the common line is in all this stuff. And it was only then that I realized that actually probably the one thing that I was really interested in was doing drama. So then I applied for university to do a drama degree, an academic degree rather than a practical one. And I didn't get in anywhere, partly I think probably because I was doing maths, physics and Latin.
And what's wrong with that? I managed to combine chemistry and biology with Lambda, for God's sakes.
Well, I got into Rose Bruford in the end. And that was the course I wanted actually, because it was an actor musician course, and the music was my other great love and great passion. So that was the one course I wanted, and that's the one I got on, and then came out the other end of that and started desperately trying to make a career of it. And here we are 21 years later, just about managing.
One of our American colleagues, Sarah Chase, who used to work for Rural Media International, we are very envious of the fact that you were in a movie called Me and Orson Welles, which William Mowry directed back in 2008. A little classic, that one. How did you find... I mean, obviously, it wasn't the real Orson Welles because he passed away a few years ago. But as a biographical tale and a wonderful experience, I thought it's a great movie. It's often underrated, I feel, in the whole sort of scheme of things. Richard Linklater, of course, being the chap who worked with that. Did you find Richard a pleasure to work with?
He really was an absolute pleasure. Yeah, it was such fun because we were trying to recreate the sense of a theatrical company where you are very much, a family, and you have to really trust each other, and you to get to very close relationships with people very quickly in a rehearsal process. All that stuff is quite a unique atmosphere in theatre, which you don't necessarily get in film ordinarily. But because we were doing because the story was about a theatrical company.
It was the Mercury Theatre Company that Wells founded.
That's right, in 1930.
Yeah, exactly. 36, 37, then, of course, the War of the Worlds in 1938, and, heaven forfend, Citizen Kane as well, and all sorts of things.
Which is 75 now, isn't it, this year? So.
Yes.
So we were all on the Isle of Man, filming in this wonderful little theatre in Douglas in the Isle of Man. So we were all out there for 3 weeks together. So it was very much a sense of a theatrical company. So it was great fun, and of course, Zac Efron, who was the mighty teenage heartthrob because of the High School Musical stuff. We were sitting in a cafe one day, and he just looked up and saw a face of a girl at the window, and he just
said,
"Right." He put his knife and fork down and said, "Guys, we need to go." And we all said, "Zac, come on, man, we're on the Isle of Man."
Exactly.
There's 25 people here.
They're like
locusts. Within 20 minutes,
exactly,
we couldn't move, they had to pull a police van up to the back door of the calf, and then hustle him out through the kitchen, and then drive him around the Isle of Man for an hour and a half while the crowd subsided. It was extraordinary.
This is the same thing that happens, of course, on a weekly basis with Ben Lewis, when we have to
exactly.
smuggle him out of the programme here, actually.
Yeah,
get the police down on campus.
Whenever, should you arrive at Lincoln in some way, shape or form, Daniel, then clearly the same thing will happen. We'll just have to send all sorts of diverting information out from that perspective.
Exactly.
And, of course, the gardener in Cinderella. Who could forget the gardener?
Well, who could spot the gardener? I think the one time you might actually spot him, he's actually inside on the stairs. It's quite a funny thing to do a job like that, because obviously it's Kenneth Branagh directing. It's a massive, great production. It's Disney. It's Kate Blanchett and all. But ultimately, you're essentially reduced to the stakes of an extra.
Supporting artists.
Which is fine, and not to degrade it, but of course, that's not really what you necessarily sign up for.
Indeed. Yeah.
But there comes a point, when you're in your 40s, you've got a mortgage, you've got some children who require reclothing every 7 weeks, where you go, well, I'll do that, because it would be an amazing thing to be a part of, and I can, I can buy Frank some new trousers. But on a level of creativity and
it's not quite in the same league of Game of Thrones, let's be honest, in terms of the sort of sequence.
It's a lovely thing to have been a part of. And of course, we went to the premiere in Leicester Square and I took the children. Of course, that was absolutely thrilling. And it's one of those big, another one of those massive movies that you can say. I was a part of that, but the constant battle with the things like that. So, am I going to go for this casting for this part, which has one line? I think I'm kind of over that now. I want to do some stuff where I can get my teeth into something. But you just have to weigh that up against, well, you can sit at home for another 3 months and nothing can happen, or you can take this and it can contribute to your holiday this year, or the gas bill or whatever.
You've got to put it out there, otherwise the universe cannot meet you halfway.
Exactly.
That's true. You have to put the ego on the back burner at a point. Yeah.
Do you get recognised often, Dan?
Do I get recognised?
Yeah. Does anyone spot you? Other than locals in Seaford, obviously, but
it'll happen. It'll happen.
I'm not bothered, but I'm really not that bothered. I don't want to be having to be ushered out the back
Daniel
door.
Daniel Tewitt, the Zac Efron of the second quarter of the 20th century.
Well,
21st
see.
Century, in fact. let's get our years correct. Daniel, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay for you?
Been very entertaining, thanks.
So can we prevail upon you to join us again in 2017 and keep us updated about life, the universe, and probably actually share some more of your Harry Potter experience with our Harry Potter fan who couldn't be here today? She was gutted. Hannah Brown, will you return in 2017?
Of course, I'd love to.
Yay!
Lovely. Cheers, Dan.
Thanks a lot.
Roman candles and burning the night. Yeah, you are a shining light. Torch in the empty night, yeah, you are a shining light, yeah, you light up my life. You've always been a thorn in the side, but to me you're a shining light. You rise,
I'm sure Dan Tewitt is a shining light. As we said, MI High, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, sensational. Good debut on the production. Well done, Ben, for seeking out another good co-presenter.
Yeah, no problem.
Excellent. And an ideal warmer-upper for our next two legends, not one, but two.
Two, we got two
this
morning.
The true co-founders of Caldor City, the magical, dynamic team that are Alan Stevens and Professor Fiona Moore. Good morning, Alan. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning. You're too kind.
Morning.
Very important. So, Alan, what's this all about with the wonderful David Graham
Dalek? Ah, right. Shh. No, that's perfectly sent. Oh. That's sent to you. No, I should mention some of that, actually. Yeah. David Graham has been working... I've been working with David Graham on a special project for Vort magazine, mm-hmm. and which will hopefully be released at the end of January. But... to whet your appetite, I've sent you a few images.
Oh, a little exclusive then from the Stevens household, which we can't yet go public with. And I almost I always did. So I'll step away from that forthwith and instead ask Fiona, why no class? Not that I mean, obviously you've got bags of class, inevitably. You're Canada's class scenario.
Wonderfully put, Alan.
Get that spade is up.
Precisely. So, but why have you not been following the latest...
Were you classless, Fiona?
Yes, why am I classless?
Yes.
The Classless Society. Well, mainly, I've been wondering that myself because... and did a bit of thinking about it because, generally speaking, anything with Doctor Who related, I'll watch. Mm-hmm. But I think I came to the conclusion that the main reason is that it is actually, for me at least, a bit too far removed from the parent series. I mean, with Sarah Jane Adventures, there was Sarah Jane and quite a lot of crossover monsters. And with Torchwood, well, first of all, there was the Captain Jack connection, and then after that, there was just kind of the hands over the eyes, watching the car wreck entertainment of it. But as I said, for this, I couldn't really, I can't muster the parent series interest, and it didn't seem to be kind of from what I've seen. I have seen bits of it,
About half an episode, haven't you?
Half an episode and a quarter of another episode, and I think the the thing is, it's not really bad enough to get that car crash vibe going with me, but it didn't pique my interest on other fronts, kind of Buffy, Roswell, things with, teenagers learning about life and exploring their sexuality and things like that, which is all...
Yada yada. We've been there. We've had it times before. Please, exactly. And Alan, have you managed to get round to watching any more of the series, or was it a case of no? I've decided not to add.
No, I did watch it all.
You did, right?
Yes, I've seen every episode. Oops, sorry, desk just fell apart in front of me. I've seen every episode of the show, and I watched episode 8 on what's the day? About 2 days back.
Yeah.
Well, I said I wasn't going to didn't really want to judge a show until I'd seen all the episodes.
Indeed, yes.
Although I was a little critical of it. What can I say? On the positive side, I would say...
Total silence. On the positive side,
the effects,
nothing at all.
No, the visual effects are very good. What was the black girl? I think I said... She's not. She's not black, is she? She's a white girl.
Sometimes I listen to Richard Fitzwilliams and I think, there's a man who's done his critical analysis, etc. Alan comes on and it's like matching the whole sort of stuff. It's genius stuff from that point of view. Overall, marks out of 10, Alan, what would you give the series?
4.
There you are. So,
what's wrong with it? I mean, I'd say what's wrong with it is that it seemed like it was being written by a guy who, was not familiar with writing scripts and wasn't being given any guidance.
Always a challenge. I mean, let's face it, Patrick Ness, he's written a lot of young adult work.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what's he written in terms of script scenario? Patrick,
and I think there is a big difference between that. There was a lot of sort of info dumping and not particularly believable dialogue. Mm. And I think that was down to that. Because when you're writing a book, of course, you can go into the mind of the character, whereas in a script you have to have them express their feelings, but in such a way that it doesn't seem like it's contrived, and I don't think he really got over that. The other thing was that it's a kind of sci-fi cliche, isn't it? I must get hold of the Diamond of Zorb and use this to whatever free my country, and it's
And kind of, it was like that. It was, you know, there was the...
Strange you should say that, actually, Alan, because looking at Fiona stood in front of a Game of Thrones poster, I think she was actually just looking for the Diamond of Zorb as the dragon was about to sort of pounce. Is that real?
Yeah, well, I've never seen Game of Thrones.
You see, this just...
So I can't comment on that. But, there was
it's
a
like Monty
box.
Python and the Holy Grail with swearing. That's all.
There is
more tips.
Steady, Fiona. Hold fire. Yes, I know where you're coming from. Carry on. Yes.
There was... I've lost it there, sorry.
He's all right.
Oh, wow, yeah. The thing is, there was a single called Apocalypse Box. Was it Apocalypse Box or was that from Babylon 5?
Mm.
It was a box,
Babylon
anyway.
5, yes.
Yeah, it was a box that could destroy things or whatever. Mm. And they kept saying, you know, should we destroy the shadow kin with these things? No, I cannot do that because that would be genocide. And my Polish boyfriend who was... bit of a wooden pole.
We don't need that exposition. We don't need that info dumping. We don't need that education. We want Let's Class.
Well, the situation was that eventually they decide they are going to do it and do wipe them all out with this thing. But the thing is, the way that the Shadow King were portrayed were of this kind of amorphous evil mass, wasn't it? If they changed the king, then they all followed that person. And so, you know, if this is supposed to have some sort of relevance to, you know, people today, you know, whether you should commit genocide or not, then to present someone or a race as a sort of amorphic, you know, mass of evil is effectively, you know, racist, isn't it? You know, so it either has no relevance to our society, or you're basically suggesting that the particular group of people are beyond redemption and should be exterminated. So, you know, Doctor Who's often, and RTD often finds his trap, and it seems to have fall into his trap again, and it's getting a bit tedious now. The last episode, did you see it yourself, Alex?
No, I haven't managed to summon up the courage as yet.
Yeah. Right, the last episode, an old Doctor Who enemy returns. When I say road, I mean a recent Moffat vintage. I won't spoil it for you. And they throw a lot of things, you know, oh my goodness, what's that? You know, this person's died, and this person's turned into something else, and these people are behind that person, and what it was. And you think to yourself, I got a feeling here that they don't think they're going to be doing Series 2 because there's so much thrown at you.
Well, there are other fish to fry. Maybe Chris Chibnall won't really fancy sort of echoing the whole thing because it's all in Stephen Moffat's era and so on. So who knows?
That's actually a very good point. Yeah, I think that the fact that Moffat is leaving probably does put a big question mark over the show.
Exactly.
Okay, next thing. You've got humans, you've got Westworld, you've got power.
Yes.
Of the Daleks.
Yes.
Which one do you want to cover?
Do you know, are you going to be too critical if we say, could we actually hold it as holdover to next Thursday? Because, I mean, Westworld, fantastic. Power of the Daleks, equally fantastic. Could we go for it in 7 days' time?
Well, you could do, but Westworld, we watched Westworld yesterday, last episode.
Oh, I know, but it's so we've still got to squeeze in skiing scenarios. We've got Williams. Well, Ben, could you put those last two questions to Professor Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens, please?
Have you both enjoyed your 10 o'clock Linkfest this morning?
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, will you be joining us in 7 days' time to talk about Westworld and the Daleks?
Join us when?
7 days' time, 160 hours. You can tell Alan's a bit disappointed with that. I know, sorry, he will be back with us, don't worry. And we've also got some exciting news we can reveal then about Sunday, March the 19th, when we might actually see the Stone Tapes with Alan and Fiona and all sorts of exciting things happening in Lincoln. Something to say, okay? It's only the best online radio station overall winner, Soho Radio's very, very fine presenter extraordinaire, William Sitwell. Good morning, William.
Morning.
You're just winning awards left, right, and centre. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, it's sort of best editorial routines. Now it's best online radio station. What is the Sitwell magic touch?
I think we get these things in lieu of money.
Ah, well, there we are.
Thing, you know, I think we'll give them awards and we don't have to pay the bastards.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's a way forward. Ben, I know you're always keen to speak to William, so take it away, sir.
Oh, I'm just wanted to ask you, what have you been up to lately, William? Has it been up to much?
Watching Polish videos, presumably.
Much. Yeah, have you been anything interesting?
No, just twiddling my
thumbs. Exactly. That's the kind of...
Just ambling around, you know, trying to... Yeah. You know, I sort of spend most of my time on my hands and knees scouring the pavement for loose change.
Yeah, yeah. And as most editors do, it would seem, in the 21st century.
And students.
Yeah.
Yeah. Students and editors, it's a way forward. Ben has said he hasn't been able to shed a tear over the Allegro on Twitter.
What's wrong with him? Is this man not a... This guy not human?
No, it's not that. I don't know. I understood the story and everything, and I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't in the frame of mind at the time to find it tearjerking. I understood it. It was sad. Don't get me wrong, but I just didn't shed a tear.
Sad. It's happy. It's not sad.
Well, joyful. Happy. Well, emotional. Emotional. We'll call it.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. You know, you can take a good hard look at yourself. See if there's a soul inside you, and the rest of us will. Watch it and
cry
right out merrily.
Exactly.
Oh, I feel bad now.
Well, Ben, it's good, probably because you're from Brighton.
Yeah. You should. I'm not feeling any festive love from you, whoever helped you up.
Thanks, William.
Maybe it's too early. We're 1 week away from knowing the winner of the Christmas Bake Off, judged, I think, by Linda Hewitt in the studio. We will actually endeavour, William, to send you some photos via Facebook, which you can comment on. Are you cycling at present, or have you just decided to step into the motorway?
I have half of me is on my bike, but I've stopped.
Ah, okay.
Stopped to talk to you. I'm in Soho, which is in London. And I'm mooching about, waiting to do an interview in a few minutes. And having just seen one of the country's greatest osteopaths, Barry Savory, he is a legend.
Oh. Well, there we are. A shameless plug for Barry Savory, one of the country's greatest osteopaths. It gets to the bone.
I love it when you're lost for words.
Well, I was thinking of an arthritis feature which we had hoped to run in the first part of the programme, but in the end we didn't actually get through at all, and oft times it's difficult to actually start chewing on the old bone of where we're going and all sorts of other issues, so it's best to step away from that perspective. Anyway, can we find out who is, are you interviewing or are you being interviewed, William?
There's some lunatics who got hold of me and they want to talk to me. I'm not quite sure who they are. I think they have a podcast.
Oh.
Something like Men in Diapers. It's all a bit weird. I'm slightly worried. I think I should go in with security.
Yeah. Well, we're just talking about, clearly, Zac Efron and his challenges with security and being mobbed and so on. Men in Diapers, I don't know. Yeah, MID,
is
MID?
A feature on Deli Bellies? Or...
Oh, please.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think these guys, they have some sort of Twitter feed, and I managed to find a small moment in my schedule to go and meet these lunatics. And, you know, we might have a chat almost as groundbreaking as this one.
Well, if it helps at all, I still am in the state of recovery and shock from a 1982 interview I actually did with Sid Little and Eddie Large, who were indeed dressed in diapers for their then Christmas show.
Why haven't they been arrested?
Well, please just don't go there, William. Please step away from the diapers and indeed the comedians of the late 20th century. And instead, Ben, we'll put those last two questions to you because I think clearly you can rephrase this. Will he return so we can find out about the men in diapers?
Yes. Well, William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning? Although be it very brief.
Brief. Well, let's talk about something next time. I think we should talk about festive wine choices for Christmas. Let's do that next week.
Sounds very good.
That's on the list. That's sorted.
Indeed.
Out,
and then we'll obviously find out your opinion on our Christmas Bake Off.
Photos, at least.
Yes.
I don't think it would work if we actually posted it down.
Post them a cookie or something.
It's a way, who knows what the girls
send it by
come
pigeon.
Up with. It's amazing.
Send me some cake crumbs somewhere.
William, you deserve so much more, particularly as indeed it's the wonderful book Eggs or Anarchy that's going to be awarded to the prize-winning entry.
Amazing. Yes. Oh, right. Yes. 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 Yeah, well, yeah. I was selling them last night. My pocket is full of £20 notes.
There you go.
So you're not scrambling on the floor anymore now, William.
It's just
no, but I just went for my car keys, and all my money fell out. So.
It's just one challenge after another in the Sitwell world. Never mind. He will return. Lawyers dwell on
the small details since Daddy had to fly. Oh, but I know a place where we can go, still untouched by men. So watch the clouds roll by and the tall grass waves in the wind. And you can lay your head back on the ground and let your
when research by Holiday Travel Watch suggests that 73% of Brits know very little about safety on the slopes, with more than a fifth not being advised on how to ensure equipment was fitted safely, and a shocking 72% not being advised on the risks of dangers and injury, would indeed be the end of the innocents. To address these amazing facts and indeed provide us with some solutions, we're delighted to be able to welcome from Holiday Travel Watch the fabulously talented Frank Brayany. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Good to connect with your good self. And clearly the skiing, I mean, our studio co-presenter today, Ben Lewis, has been skiing, but not for quite some time.
No, for about 5 years now.
So would you have actually sort of said when you first went skiing, you knew very little about safety on the slopes, and you didn't also know that standard travel insurance doesn't include cover for winter sports?
Well, I did know about the standard travel insurance because I had to get it myself. So I have to pay, obviously, a little bit extra for skiing, or winter sports, as they called it. And then... With regards to safety on the slopes, I think we had quite a few lessons, and they taught us through that. But I mean, otherwise, there's probably lots of bits and bobs you tend to miss out.
But injuries can happen, can they not, Frank?
Well, indeed they can, and sadly, most of the injuries are practiced, if you like, by fellow skiers. I mean, one of the mantras that you should remember is speed and distance whilst you're on the slope, and there are many collisions between skiers, you know, whether you're at beginner level or indeed more experienced.
And are there different types of insurance depending on your age?
Yes. There are some policies, as I understand it, that limit you up to the age of 75. You've got to be a fairly fit and able skier at 75, I would imagine. But some policies will go as high as 80 years of age.
Now, you wouldn't necessarily regard skiing as an extreme sport, but in terms of going abroad and taking part in various aspects with respect to that, what are the steps that people need to be aware of when they actually start taking out travel insurance? Because sometimes it is something which doesn't necessarily get sort of wrapped into the whole package deal, particularly if you're going out and going off-piste, shall we say.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. These days, many holidaymakers actually buy the holiday and they think about the travel insurance afterwards. And then what they do is they go online and they pick the cheapest. But the cheapest isn't necessarily the one that covers you for winter sports. So if you are going for the cheapest, you must make sure that you buy the bolt-on for skiing. But then, of course, some of the policies don't even include snowboarding. So if you intend to do a bit of skiing... or indeed try your hand at snowboarding, for example, or indeed go off-piste, you need to make sure that you actually extend that insurance so you've got that cover. If you don't, it'll be extremely costly for you.
Looking at some of the figures that obviously Holiday Travel Watch have put together from this perspective, nearly half of Brits don't know that standard travel insurance doesn't include cover for winter sports. And indeed, 17,000 folk will come home on crutches this year, all thanks to a skiing accident. It's enough to put you off skiing for life.
Yes, but I want to put that in context because that accounts for about a quarter of a percent of all those who go away on skiing holidays. But having said that, you know, our survey found that, for example, 73% said that they knew very little about safety on the slopes, And 72% said they were either not advised or didn't even recognize the risk or possibility of injury. And I think really the conclusion that I've gleaned from our survey is that, you know, as consumers, we need to assume the position of responsibility for ourselves. A skiing holiday is quite like no other holiday. It's certainly not like going for a trip to the beach or something like that. It is very physically exerting. It has all sorts of risk factors. But, you know, coming back to the insurance point, you need to make sure you also comply with the local laws of the slopes. So, for example, some areas will require you to wear a hard hat or a safety helmet. In fact, you should wear a safety helmet these days because the slopes have become so much more crowded because of its popularity, because woolly hats don't save heads, that's for sure.
That could be the quote of the morning, actually, Frank. Woolly hats don't save heads.
Ben.
Is there anything else other people should look out for with travel insurance? I mean, obviously focusing just on skiing.
Because there's water skiing, of course.
Well, what are other snow sports? Do they all come under the skiing bracket as such?
No, you'll find that like all travel insurance policies, they vary. So you have to be very careful about the wording. It's that famed small print point. The important point is before you go, you should actually take out the insurance at the time you book, but before you go, make sure that you are covered for what you intend to do. But if along the way you think, well, you know, I'm going to try my hand at a bit of snowboarding or perhaps off-piste skiing, talk to your travel insurance and let them know that that's what you intend to do and extend that insurance. But I think the other important point, and this is what many holidaymakers fail to do, is to take out that all-important European health insurance card. I had experience of that over the summer. My wife was taken very seriously ill whilst we were in France. I had fully comprehensive insurance, or she had, and we had our EHIC cards with us. We paid £300 out of a £6,500 bill. So, you know, there it is from personal experience, fully comprehensive travel insurance, EHIC card at the ready. You know, be prepared for disasters that can happen on the ski slopes.
And best place to go to find out further details, Frank, would it be the Holiday Travel Watch website?
Indeed it would. I've got a list of before you go and when you're there, key top tips. But anybody who wants to talk to me about that can do so in Twitter. My handle is at HGWFrank.
And that is why Frank Brownie is the Holiday Travel Watcher's consumer champion. Extraordinaire.
Thank you.
From that point of view. Frank, it's been fantastic touching base with your good self and wrapping up the programme with you this morning. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link and not too stressful, hopefully?
Indeed, yeah, it's been absolutely great. Thank
you. So will you be kind enough to rejoin in 2017? I didn't even mention about the fact that 22 people actually die from their injuries on a ski slope. Best not think about that, really.
It's not a good
challenge line entirely. Will you return in the near future and keep us appraised of what's happening?
I will indeed, absolutely.
Hey, Frank Brainy, fantastic stuff there. And it's a quick time to actually thank Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Tracy Loftus. Well, we thanked Tracy, even though we couldn't quite manage to connect with Tracy.
Yeah.
But thanks to Dan Tewitt, William Sitwell, Alan Stevens, Professor Fiona Moore, and Frank Brainy, and you, dear listener, for being with us. Thank you, Ben. It's been an enjoyable penultimate midweek drive more edition
enjoyed it.
Of 2016. Back next week for, of course, the cake-off and more.
Indeed.
That's it. Great news happening as far as Siren is concerned, including the news. And later on, of course, we've got Sound and Country Vision. That's it. Can we say bye-bye, Ben?
Bye-bye.
We were searching for ours. We were burning cigars with the white plastic tips till we saw the sun. We said crazy things like...